Om Shanti. The whole question of keeping our attitude very elevated is probably, in practical terms, is probably one of the things that we have to learn most. Because you could say the attitude is responsible for two things. It's the posture that we have internally in the face of anything that's going on. And it's also because of the posture that we have, it's the perspective that we create. So you could say the attitude is where you see things from and how you see them. And just as in the, you know, this is one of the things I am very grateful for before coming to Baba. I really was an adept of Raja Yoga, of Patanjali. And of course, he was the one who codified what the world knows as Raja Yoga. It's not what I came to understand later on. This is what Baba teaches is actually the true Raja Yoga. But you can see where he got his stuff from, just as in the all of the scriptures from the Kopara age onwards were remembrances of some sanskar that came up in the souls, their remembrance of coming into contact with God at the confluence age and taking something. So this fellow also must have been touched in a way, and he was the one that actually developed all of what are called asanas. You know, the Hatha Yoga postures. And just by curiosity, there were 84 postures. It's an interesting number. 84 main postures. And so he was looking at the nature and getting his inspiration. This one is a sort of a flower, or this a flower posture, like a lotus posture, or a snake posture, or the lion posture, where, you know, they sit and they stick their tongue out right down to their chin. But when I came to Baba, one of the first books that I took up was a book by Jagdish Bhai called The Way and the Goal of Raja Yoga, in which he parallels what Baba teaches and what Patanjali taught. And it's a fantastic book, it's a fantastic inspiration. And I understood then that actually the postures that we need to have are not with the body, but the soul. And soul postures are in fact our attitudes. You know, according to the situation, according to the people that are around you, we have to do a very quick appreciation of what's going on and put ourselves into the right posture internally. That internal posture is called the attitude. So if you have an elevated posture, that means you can see more. If you can see more, you can understand more. If you can understand more, you can decide better. And if you're down here, down below, let's say, for example, you have an attitude of very little self-value. You don't value yourself, so your posture internally is like shrunken, you know, you become sort of closed up inside because you feel very little, very, very tiny. And of course, when you look at a situation, it looks so big and so impossible to conquer. The situation that ends up defeating you. But of course, if you have an unlimited sense of your self-value, and that means you've got you're very light and very, you know, wide in your perspective, then, you know, what is it? It's nothing. The situation is just a sort of a speck of dust. If you have a big consciousness, the things are tiny. If you have a little consciousness, the things are big. And this sort of changing of our, I think the word would be morphing, how things just change around us. But in fact, the things change around us because those things are happening inside of us. we're not keeping a solid internal state, a stable internal state, no matter what's going on. And of course, we only ever travel inside of ourselves, in a sense, you know. Even if I go somewhere, I'm going to some other place inside me. The place exists. This is probably why in bhakti they think that I am everywhere, I am everything. But my version of everything exists here and is different from everyone else's version. And this is very, I would say, a very deep thing. That I have the ingredients inside myself to create the right postures according to what's going on. But not only that, according to the postures that I form inside me, I'm actually influencing the way that things go on. Yeah? It's not that everything's happening and I have to sort of be on the defensive all the time and block all of the attacks from Maya and block all of the attacks from the senses and you know, that's one way of living, avoiding problems, avoiding difficulties, running away from them. But in fact, has anyone here ever tried to run away from a problem and have gone somewhere else and have discovered that the same sort of thing starts to come up again? Have you ever had that experience? No. So, where am I when I am looking at things? When I'm looking at the situations, and of course there are basically, one of the things we were talking about in the course on soul consciousness, is there are basically, you know, two sides to us. Half of our existence has been in the copper and the iron age, and the other half has been in the golden and silver ages. And so we contain within ourselves the whole cycle, in a sense. We've contained within ourselves whatever happens to us in the cycle as well. Yeah? So as I'm going through my sanskars internally, the things that are happening around me are according to those sanskars. And it's such a deep thing that the description that we had when we first came along, and Baba had said it, is that the soul is a record and time is the needle. Yeah? So where the needle is, that's exactly what's happening. And because that's happening inside of each of us, collectively we produce this this big drama, actually. And all of the things, all of the events are coming out of the souls, right? So the illusion is that what happens outside of us has nothing to do with us, you know? That I'm visiting Madhuban and I'm seeing this and I'm going to this end, I'm going home, that I'm going to my job and I'm, you know, all of those things are happening out there somewhere and I'm okay in turn. It's an illusion. In fact, when I go home, I go here. When I go to work, I go here, right? I go to my work. I go to my place. And I go to my relationship. And unless I understand who it is that's thinking and who it is that's interacting with things and change that, then I probably condemn myself to the sorts of tests that appear around me. You know, even a karmic account, how does that work actually? Internally, I've put myself like this. This is an internal posture and attitude, right? And so the things that happen will happen in this way. But if I change my attitude and put my internal posture, I'm just trying to illustrate it. You know, without any whiteboard or anything, right, or a PowerPoint demonstration. But if I put myself this way, things will happen in this way. Now change, things will happen in that way. And this idea that we see the world through a sort of a keyhole, and that keyhole is produced basically the size of ourselves, right? How limited or unlimited I am is my size, right? And I will see the things according to that spiritual size. It's probably a word you can't use much. It's okay, the translation, you're understanding what I'm saying. Yeah? Yeah? So if I see myself this big, my whole existence will be this big. Some people really are just have that, my house, the center, and the work. And they just go around and around and around and around and around and around and around. 20, 30, 40 years afterwards, they just, that's it. So unless I start to think more, wider, and embrace more, I will be doing that. So it's a word, in fact, that we don't really have any references for. Baba uses it a lot, the word unlimited, right? So we can understand the dictionary definition, right? Unlimited means what? No limits, right? We can understand what it means as a word, but what does it mean in practice? How unlimited am I really? And the limits, in fact, are what confines my ability to put myself one way or the other, and therefore it affects the attitude more than anything. You probably know that sequence that Baba has talked about. In fact, all of the words rhyme in Hindi. You have smriti, which means the consciousness. And consciousness means basically what I feel that I am at a particular moment. I am something. I learnt during this course, there were Greek people in the audience, and I mentioned that the word ego comes from Greek, and it's not and it means I, actually. And they say, yes, in Greek, when I say I am going to the bank, they say ego going to the bank means, so it is the word I in Greek, ego. I didn't know that. I knew that it came from the Greek, but I didn't know that it was so, like, it's the main word, actually. What's the main word in any language? What is it? I. How many times do you use that a day, in one day? Have you counted? Lots? More than 100 times? Probably. 200? Yeah? Anyway. So in Greek they use the word ego at least 200-300 times a day, you know. Ego. Ego this and ego that. So the problem is not ego as a word. You can't conquer, you can't eliminate the I, so you can't eliminate the ego, but you can eliminate the ego of body consciousness. And so what we were talking about is that you are what determines this sequence, the consciousness, when you say I something, I did this, I did that, I did the other thing, then you, the first thing that happens is that produces an effect in the mind. And that effect is a feeling or a sensation or an emotion. That word is called sthiti. It's a mental or emotional state. So whatever you feel that you are, I am a man, I am a woman, I am a ugly person, I'm a victim of so many things. When someone comes towards you, for example, let's say, does anyone have any difficult people in their immediate vicinity? Do you have any difficult people at home or in the center or... Yeah? Anyone? No, not at all. Okay. So when that person comes to you, just look at what happens. How do you define yourself? Okay? There's a person that really treated you badly last week. Yeah? And now that person is coming to you. How do you define yourself in that situation? What do you say to yourself? What do you think? I am better than them. Okay, that could be there. Huh? Yeah, you're afraid maybe. You can be afraid. So you are defining yourself as a victim. Here comes so-and-so, I am the victim. Right? Because I was really treated badly last week and I didn't like it and it was terrible what they did, and so all of that sort of thinking shapes your feeling, shapes your emotional state, which is the sthiti, and this is very deep stuff from Baba himself. There's an Avyak Mulya, a couple, about what I'm saying here. So the consciousness affects the emotional mental state. And the emotional mental state, which is sort of all over the place most of the time, it's with that that we form our attitudes. When we first started to come to Baba, everyone sat on the floor. There were no such things as sofas. And Muli was in the history hall or on the meditation hall. We were just sitting on the floor with Baba, for example. And Baba was sitting on a very low gadi as well, so very close. You know, and but these days there are sofas and comfort and this and that. I'm not saying that it's bad, but doesn't, we're not, who has a very good physical posture? Hand up. No one. Not me either. I'm the first one I don't have. Anyway, because of internal flexibility, muscular flexibility, and even the bone structure, some people can put their leg behind their neck, you know, when you do hatha yoga. In a similar way, if we're not used to moving with the things and therefore, you know, being flexible internally, when a situation comes up to us, we're not able to move quickly into the right posture. And that the responsible for that is the consciousness and the mental state. So it's the consciousness which is the basic foundation upon every thought process. Every sort of thing that, you know, we go in some sort of a mental voyage somewhere, and you know, we get lost in some sort of wasteland of you know, attractive or useless things, and then we realize I've just lost an hour or 2 hours just without any spiritual growth at all. So that happened because I was defining myself internally as something or the other, which wasn't right. So using this example, the person who treated me badly last week is coming. Internally, I have defined myself as a victim of this person, and by saying, for example, someone or something is difficult, what am I defining myself as? What happens? What happens? This is difficult. This person is difficult. This situation is difficult. Therefore, I'm small. I'm incapable. Maybe I'm terrible. I won't be able to do it. So that's the basis, right? That will create the sort of things, internal, the feelings and the emotions that won't be appropriate to deal with it. You know, if I'm defining as something as difficult, it will be always difficult. I can't live with that person, right? The sister in my center, or the brother who helps in that department, I can't deal with it. It's very difficult. Therefore, I am incapable. Therefore, I am little. You know, something like that. And therefore, when I try to see and understand things, I'm already defeated internally. So the consciousness is the basics, and then the mental state on top of that, and then the vritti, which is the attitude. And of course, Baba says, you know, according to our attitude, that's how we see things. That's the drishti. So you have smriti, which is the consciousness, sthiti, which is the mental emotional state. Then you have the vritti, which is the attitude, and then you have the drishti, how you see things. That's what I'm saying. If you are underneath something and you look at it, you will only see the thing from underneath it. Right? If you put yourself underneath the situation, underneath the difficulty, or it's on top of you and you're looking at it, how will you see it? The Jagdish Bhai uses this example in one of these books. He talks about this sequence. He talks about being bitten by a dog, right? So, you were walking down the street, a dog who bit you last week appears, right? You define to yourself, oh dear, I'm not that dog again. That dog bit me last week. I am the victim of that dog, right? So my mental emotional state is one of fear, right? And fear produces an internal posture of, you know, retraction. And my vision of the dog is I'm already visualizing the bite, you know. I'm seeing the dog's teeth this big and the rest of the body nothing, right? I'm visualizing the bite. And so from the vision that I have, that's the action that I do. So I act according to how I see things. I see things according to my attitude. My attitude is formed according to my mental and emotional state. And my mental and emotional state is the first consequence of whatever change there has been in the I am. Got it? So it's a sequence. So there I am, you know, visualizing being bitten by the dog again, and I send an instruction to my legs to run. You know, all of this happens in about a fraction of a second, the whole sequence, right? Dog coming, fear, retraction internally, vision of the bite, and then sending my legs a message to get out of there. Yeah? Run. Run. And Baba says that according to our actions, that's the other word is shruti, which means the world that I form around me. And the world comes back to me. The world comes back to me, and this is how karma operates, by the way, because the world affects the state of consciousness. My world affects me because I've done it, I've created it. So the creator has created the creation, and the creation comes back to us. That's why people say these days we create our own reality. We say, oh yeah, okay, fine. What is the actual mechanism of that though? How does it work? I create my own reality. I create my own reality by defining myself this way or that way, by having a mental or emotional sort of thinking, my thoughts. And my thoughts are responsible for the sort of attitude that I can manage to have. the attitude is responsible for how I see the things, and how I see the things is responsible for what I do, and what I do creates something which comes back to me. That's how karma works. It may come back immediately, may come back after a year, 10 years, or 10 births, right? It may come back all at once, or may come back in quotas, right? Like installments. So it's a very deep thing. If I want to change my experience of life, I have to change my attitude. Actually, I have to change my actions. For that, I have to change my vision. For that, I have to change my attitude. For that, I have to change my thoughts. And for that, I have to change my consciousness. So when you say, I, who's speaking? Who, when you talk to yourself, who's talking to whom? Is it the I of body consciousness that has the difficulty, or is it the I of soul consciousness that has the difficulty? Which one? If I'm soul conscious, really soul conscious, is anything difficult? Huh? So why don't we see that when there's a difficulty, it's because I'm thinking, I so and so, I did this, I did that, you know. I mean, one of the things that's so interesting when we interact with others, right? An interaction with anyone will be an interaction between two little worlds, yeah? My feelings and my thoughts and my attitudes and my vision, it's all sort of going around inside here. And the other person comes along, it's all sort of, you know, different mix. And these two mixtures try to interact, you know, try to talk to each other. And because if both of them have a limited vision, which is normal, right? You know, for how long during the day can you keep an unlimited attitude, really? Huh? Here it's easy, right? It's easier. Not necessarily, because this Baba once called Madhuban the house of mirrors. And said, like, wherever we go, we see ourselves. You know, I can't... Whatever is not so great there becomes magnified here, yeah? So it's not that this place is completely Maya-free, right? Sometimes people have their biggest Mayas in Madhuban, by the way. You know? But, so I'm with my stuff, right? And the other person's with his or her stuff, and we're trying to interact. And it becomes strange sometimes, because I see the world this way, you know, through my keyhole, whatever limitations I have, and the limitations basically are the culture, even the language is a limitation. Some words in some languages have some meaning. For example, recently we understood that what we call, when we translate the word seva into English or into other languages, it becomes more like work or functionality. You see a lift that says out of service, means it's not working, right? So when we say service, we automatically think action or work or functionality. But the word Baba uses, if you go into the depths of it, and the word seva has a more spiritual meaning. It means something you do that you dedicate selflessly to God or to some higher cause. So I can be with a Bharatwasi brother, he's doing seva in that consciousness, and I'm doing service in the understanding of the word as, you know, work. It's not the same. So there are limitations of language, there are limitations of culture. You know, even the word freedom means something in Russia, means different in Australia, for example. The same word will have a different meaning or a different concept. So we are limited by our history. We're very limited by the type of body that we have. You know, I'm neither a brother or a sister as a soul, yeah. But body consciousness is related to the type of body we have, or the age of the body that we have, or the beauty of the body that we have, you know. I'm not body conscious of my other bodies, right? My previous bodies, I'm body conscious of this one. So, well, whatever it is, I have the lens of my sex, I have the lens of my culture as well, and the lens of my language. And more particularly, I have the lens of my own experiences. I did this, I did that, this happened, that happened. You know, I grew up and so many things, and you know, I came into Gyan, and then this happened, and that happened, and so all of those things reduce or limit our perspective. So I'm looking at the world this way, and I meet someone who's looking at the world that way, right? Yeah? And then we start talking, and I say, well, can't you see this thing? It's so clear. And they're, no, I'm not seeing it at all. What are you talking about? He won't see it because he's limited this. I'm limited this way. He's limited that way, and it doesn't. It's not the same. So, what does an elevated attitude mean? It means to open the door, not stop looking through the keyhole. Open the door and see the whole thing. An unlimited attitude depends on an unlimited self-definition. Yeah. Who am I really? That's always the main question. You know, it's even probably more important than who's God, because unless I'm really soul-conscious, I can't even come close to God. You know, who has a connection with God? Is it this poor little individual who's going through so much suffering and, you know, looking through a limited perspective and saying, Baba, please help me, you know, it's really important that I understand this. And then Baba will say, no, open your eyes, child. Look at the whole thing. He said, be trikaldashi. Yeah? Give everything a past, a present, and a future. Give everyone a past, a present, and a future, and you'll see a bigger picture, and then you'll be able to understand what's going on. Or he'll say, come child and sit with me and see the things from where I see them. Come child, see this individual the way I see that individual. Because Baba never gets upset with anyone, right? Does Baba get upset? Just like you were saying, another Baba can come and go as he pleases, right? He has a very different slant on things than we do. So, if I wanted to, and what's the consciousness that Baba has? You know, once he said, I love because I understand. You know, I love because I know. And we know what Baba knows, so how come we can't love as Baba loves? That's the thing, isn't it? So here's our model, you'd say. Especially Brahma Baba has reached that same unlimited perspective. You know, in the mulis we hear from time to time, the Avyek mulis in which Baba is saying, we've been sitting here with the television on, watching the amusing scenes of the children, right? The games that the children play. And Baba is smiling, right? Baba is smiling. And what's in Baba's smile then? What's there? What do you think? Tell the person next to you, what do you think is behind Baba's smile when he looks at us? That's a question. Sit with someone and talk to them. What do you think? What's behind the smile? It's good to try to see things from Baba's perspective, isn't it? And you know, sometimes he really surprises us. Like the other day when I was singing a song to Baba, and then he called me, gave me an apple, and he said, very good. Everything okay? And you know what he said? He said, give the words of the song to her. Give the words of the song to her. I said, it's like also Baba trying to appreciate in a way, isn't it? Sometimes it's very surprising. Give the words of the song to Nilu. Because she'd given Baba the apple to give to me, and Baba's giving me the apple. He said, well, give the words to her. Interesting, huh? You know, Baba's the way. If we want to really get our attitudes elevated, all we have to do is to think how Baba's seeing things. You know, how would he see my day today? And in fact, that's when we offer our day to Baba, that's how it should be. It should be a sort of interaction, a conversation in which I'm trying to see how my day was from Baba's point of view. And therefore I won't feel bad or little or sad or anything like that, you know. Because I'm trying to get Baba involved in my self-conversation. And I know Baba will never put me down, or he won't hold anything against me ever. He will only ever see my virtues, even in spite of the defects or the mistakes or whatever that are there. You know, maybe I raised my voice a little bit too much, or I spoke too much, I spent an hour thinking useless thoughts. So when I go to Baba before I go to sleep, it should be like, okay, Baba, how did you see my day? Rather than me punishing myself. That's how it is. We don't need to punish ourselves. We just have to learn to see ourselves as we truly are. And if my ego can't do that, Baba certainly can. So my relationship should be that sort of close, so that I can, you know, self-checking is actually checking myself with Baba, not just checking what bad I've done, making lists of bad things and then saying that I'm bad. What's going to happen is that I'm making myself smaller and therefore more capable of doing other bad things. You know, I have to make my sense of self bigger. I'm an 84 birth soul, you know. One of the biggest perhaps dilemmas that we all have is in one body we have two births. We have the physical birth and we have the spiritual birth, but in the same body. And not only that, if the first birth is the golden, is in the foundation birth, is like you could say the first birth. The foundation birth is the confluence age birth, the spiritual birth. So I have my first birth and last birth in the same body. So which one is dominating the conversation? Which of those two is dominating the conversation? Is it the spiritual birth and the spiritual consciousness and all of those things which hold the conversation and is telling in the other part to keep quiet and keep calm and keep, you know, under control? Or is it the last birth and all of the stuff that we've gathered and all of our memories and all of our stories and, you know, all our complications, and that's the birth that's dominating the conversation? Which one dominates the conversation? So when I say I, who's speaking? When I talk to myself, which one of me is speaking? Which one of the two me's? The two me's in the same body, which one of them is speaking? When you talk to yourself, who talks to whom? In our context, it's definitely the spiritual birth, the spiritual me of the confluence age, talking to the body conscious me of the Iron Age, right? So who's winning the conversation? Who's winning? we know who should be winning. We would all say, yes, of course, the spiritual me has to win, right? Of course. But is it really like that all the time? So at the end of the day, I have to check which me is winning, basically. And that's the, you know, you've probably seen those cartoons where you have an individual and there's a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other. Have you seen? No. Do this, do that. No, yes, of course. No, wait a minute, you know. So the two me's are trying to take over the foundation, which is our consciousness. You know, that's what Maya is actually. Maya is when the false me takes over the consciousness. And the true me goes into sort of hibernation or something for a while. It sleeps. So these are the sorts of things that, you know, if I look at that sequence, and I want to change it, you know, I'm not happy with the situation. I can't control other people. I can't control events. But if I organize myself internally, the things around me will start to organize themselves differently. And that's the proof of some karmic change, right? You'll find, for example, if you are progressing and your attitudes are the most elevated ones, and because they're under the control of the spiritual me, then, you know, what I will notice, first of all, there are less, not that there are less obstacles, there may be obstacles, but they're much more easily put in their place. Yeah, I will notice that people and things start to cooperate with me more. And this is where Baba says, don't eat the green fruit. So as our karmic situation improves, we shouldn't sort of eat it up there and then. We should sort of reinvest it in the good things that we're doing. And, you know, later on we'll get the fruits. But I will definitely, if I'm doing things with the right consciousness and therefore the right attitude and the right vision, the right mental state, then I will definitely notice changes, even physical changes in the world around me. You know, I'll notice that situations have changed and people are more cooperative. And this is the experience of being a master, as Baba says. The master of the world, the master, and I really love when Baba says the embodiment of success. Success for Baba will be success in this thing, success in maintaining the most elevated attitude towards things, and therefore the most elevated vision and action. That's success. So Baba would say that an embodiment of success, even matter. He once said it like this, such a beautiful expression. The master comes and matter and others throw petals on the path of the master, saying, please, master, come. Can you imagine matter? What do you need, master? You know? Situations saying, what do you need, master? So instead of battling and struggling, we are keeping an elevated consciousness, and the things are just sort of moving aside as we move fast. Maybe, who's had that sort of experience? Even partially, yeah? Not constantly, maybe, but sometimes, yeah? And who's feeling that it's getting better and better? Things are flowing better. Yeah. So if things are flowing better, it's because your attitudes are becoming more and more elevated. That's how it works. You remember, attitude is a mixture of internal posture and perspective. Perspective is how I see the things. Actually, perspective is what I see. And the posture is how I see it. So, you know, we get the feeling of just being carried forward by the drama, just flowing along. Flowing along and things, great things happening around us, yeah? So come to Madhavan, you actually flow to Madhavan, not come here, you just flow here. And then you go back home, you flow to your home, and then you go to the, you're doing some service program somewhere, you just flow there. Yeah. Look at the daddies, that's definitely how they live. Definitely. Everything is easy. Because I'm easy. Yeah? Okay, if you set this sort of stage in Amrit Vela, you can retain it for more time during the day. Definitely. If you don't set yourself in this sort of stage in Amrit Vela, you won't. There's nothing you do during the day will make up for a bad Amrit Vela, really. So, we have to train ourselves. I don't know who said it, but one of our senior sisters once said, if you had to earn $1 million a day at from 4 to 5, who wouldn't be up? If you could earn $1 million for 1 hour's work every day, who wouldn't be there sort of fully attentive and alert? And it's a bit like that. Amrit Vela is like that. We have to organize ourselves to be fully alert at Amrit Vela, no matter what else happens. And then we can set ourselves, and then we'll have the experience of more constancy. You know, less battling. As Baba says, we go back to our original state, and this is what we were talking about in the course on soul consciousness. The aim and object of meditation is to have one or the other experiences of our original state. And Baba, in the conversation with Baba, we allow Baba to take us to the incorporeal world to have that experience. So Baba says that we came down a ladder of our births, and we have to, in a way, in the journey back to our original state, we pass through our Iron Age sanskars, we pass through our Copper Age sanskars, we pass by our Silver Age sanskars and Golden Age sanskars. In one birth, we have to journey back through them. And of course, the Iron Age sanskars are very much connected with the gross aspects of the vices, you know, the objects of the vices and physical manifestations of the vice. That means our stage is pretty much Iron Age still, if that's more frequent than anything else. Copper Age will be, you know, I'm battling with other people. So Iron Age sanskars will be battling with the vices in their gross form. Copper Age will be rivalry and competition and, you know, comparison and judging and all of those things. Difficulties in relationships, that's Copper Age stuff, basically. And in the Silver Age, we finish battling with the vices, we finish battling with others, and we're just battling with ourselves. And Golden Age, no battle with anyone or anything. So then I can see where I am. Maybe we go through the whole, like sometimes you see in some cities, 4 seasons in one day, right? Sometimes we go through the 4 ages in one day. Yeah? But what are you, where are you mostly? That's probably a good, let's say, diagnostic that you can do of yourself. Diagnosis. I think people need to go. So, I remember that, and in fact one person asked me that question yesterday, that I used to think that, you know, it's just enough to concentrate on all of our good things. And Daddy Guzar came to a meeting in which he asked, what are you doing? What are your yuktis to transform your sanskars? And I said, well, my present yukti was to, just because I have the sanskars of perfection now, I can access them now and I can be that for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And she said, that's great, but what you need to do also is to be very conscious of what are the things that bring you down. And it's not that you're feeling bad about those things, but you have to be conscious of where you fall, or if you fall, like you're filling up a bucket, you have to be aware that there are some holes in it maybe. So you're trying to become full on one side, but you're not aware that there are any holes. So what are those holes? And so she said, be very, very honest with yourself and to see where are the things that are bringing you down, and not just the things that are bringing you up. And give that to Baba, right? Offer what you do well to Baba for service, and offer what you do badly to Baba so that he can take it away. But be conscious of those two things, you know. Don't feel bad about yourself. I don't know if that helps you. Is that okay? Attitude is a mixture of perspective and posture. So it's, where am I sitting to see what's going on? What's my position internally? And how am I sitting internally? You know, both things are there in the attitude. Where am I seated and how I'm seated? Okay? Om Shanti.